This is Patrick Daly, and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about international business, supply chain, and globalization, and the effects these have had on the way we work, play, and live over recent decades. There's a little bit of history, a dash of economics, a sprinkling of business, and an overlay of personal experience, both for me and for my interviewees from around the world. In today's program, we'll be talking to Lisa Anderson, the founder and president of LMA Consulting Group, based in Claremont, California, which is in the metro area of LA. Lisa is an expert in manufacturing strategy and end-to-end supply chain transformation, working with clients in manufacturing and distribution across multiple sectors, such as aerospace, defense, industrial products, healthcare, food, and beverage. Lisa has been named as a top influencer in supply chain, D2B tech, and ERP by SAP, Arketti, and Washington Frank, respectively. Lisa's also author of the book, I've Been Thinking, Turning Everyday Interaction into Profitable Opportunities. And before founding LMA Consulting, she was VP of Operations at Paperpack, which is now attends healthcare products. So welcome, Lisa, and thank you very much for being here with us today from California.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Okay. So I've just given a kind of a brief overview of your career there, but you might give us a few more details about your career going kind of back to, I guess, college or post-college or whatever. And how did you come to be a consultant in 2021?
Yeah, so when I went to college and got my undergraduate degree in business with an emphasis on operations management. So that's how I got into this field. I became interested long time ago. And then I started my career at Coca-Cola Enterprises. I was in production planning. And I went to a plastic injection molder and was doing production planning, inventory control, and some purchasing. And then I went to a third company, which was Paperpack. So they made absorbent products. So adult incontinence products and also absorbent products that supported the food industry. There, I held several different roles within manufacturing supply chain. We were a family-owned business. We grew pretty significantly over several years, and then we purchased a division of Procter & Gamble, as well as another smaller entrepreneurial company at the same time that we were going through Y2K. So we were implementing a new ERP system, and so that was quite a lot to take on at once. So through that process, we ended up bringing in a turnaround CEO, and I helped them turn around the supply chain side of things. And then I was promoted into the vice president of operations and supply chain. And then it was quite the ride, because we implemented, I ended up actually having to implement one order, one shipment, one invoice to get the processes and the systems back in order. But then we ended up relaunching product lines and a significant R&D project to also offset rising oil and gas prices, which was significant, had a significant impact on our material costs, and just like one thing after another. But we were successful in relaunching our products and straightening out our product mix, if you will, as far as what we were, you know, how well each tier performed and what they cost, and you know, how we could we actually strengthen them so we could bring sales back. Of course, that ended up screwing up manufacturing, and then we ended up straightening out manufacturing and eventually selling off the company successfully. So I ended up deciding at that time that it would be a good, you know, it was like 24/7 type of experience, a deep dive, if you will. And so I thought, why not put this to good use in consulting? So now I've been consulting for 15 years and have been helping manufacturers and distributors, supply chain organizations improve their bottom line of their business performance.
Okay. And have you always been in California? Is California your home state?
Well, since my career, yes. I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for my undergrad degree. And then I went to Arizona, where my parents were, and I found a job in California. So I've been out here since then. However, it's kind of interesting because my when I was in that vice president of operations role, we had a significant plant back in North Carolina. So I ended up being there about half the time anyway.
Okay. So you've been in consultancy business since 2005, thereabouts, 15 years, 2006, thereabouts?
Yes, correct.
So what are the main differences for you between having a very busy role in a medium to large size company and being your own person running your own consultancy business?
Well, I think that the main difference is that you're responsible for bringing in your own business, which is certainly not the case when I was a vice president of operations. So, that's one of the main differences. Aside from that, all of the skills that I've learned throughout my career have come into play for sure during my consulting career. And you're always learning every day, which was true in my professional career prior to consulting as well. So I'd say the real difference here is that you're looking for clients as well as making sure that you deliver significant results for clients.
So you need to learn to be a marketer and a salesperson, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's correct. which has always been a tricky thing for supply chain and operations professionals. So, but I enjoy it overall.
Yeah. And what inspired you to go on your own rather than seek another job, another sector or another experience?
I read a book after my role, and it said, if you're looking for another job, maybe think about consulting, but you shouldn't think about it as in between jobs. You should think about it, either do it or don't do it. And then I ended up reading a book about consulting, and actually, that book made it sound like I knew I could save companies money. I knew I could help them improve their performance. I just wasn't sure if I could figure out how to find clients. And so this book made it sound eminently doable if I provided value and followed the process. So I thought, why not? It seemed like a great idea to give it a try.
And which book was that? Do you remember the title?
I think it was it was Alan Weiss's Getting Started in Consulting. So
okay.
I ended up following that following that process. And I agreed with him with his organizational development philosophy and what he thought about leading people within companies. It's, I aligned with those values.
And what services, what kind of activities do you get involved in now with your clients? And what kind of results, outcomes are you helping them to achieve?
Generally speaking, I'm maximizing three things. So one is how to improve their customer's experience. So these days, customers are looking for rapid deliveries, 24/7 accessibility, and just, an elevated service level. So maximizing their customer service and doing customer programs. The second is profit margins. How to basically improve their profitability and efficiencies. And then the third is cash flow. So how to reduce their inventory throughout their system while keeping those other two variables going in the correct direction as well. So how do we do all three at once is really the crux of what I consult on.
You mentioned there are a couple of things along the way. You mentioned saving and you mentioned efficiency. And you mentioned inventory reduction. So these are all kind of things related to, using the minimum resource to create the maximum output or benefit. And now we have this situation post-COVID where everybody's talking about resilience. And part of resilience is having redundancy. And redundancy often means having stuff around the place that you don't need right now, but you might need if there's an emergency. So how do you think about that trade-off or that dilemma or that tension that's really strong now for companies between resilience and efficiency?
Well, I actually have been talking about that quite a bit lately, about how you need both. The only way you can be successful, and really this has been true for some time, but it's just been highlighted and aggravated, to be sure, with the COVID crisis. But the key is to be profitable and efficient at the same time. You have to be resilient. The Amazon effect is in full force. And like you said, these days you have to find ways to, you know, have duplicate source of supply or, you know, I think you asked me like, how do you do that successfully? Patrick, there's like a lot of different ways we could talk probably for hours, but, you know, I find it's not all or nothing. It's not all one way. It's not as though you have to have everything as with duplicate supply. Like one of my key clients over the years had their area of their manufacturing facility that was critical, was the machine shop. Cause without that, flowing properly, the rest of, you know, the customer service would get backed up and everything would be a problem. We actually, in that case, put excess capacity, meaning excess people, in the machine shop that was capable, or at least had people throughout the facility with additional skills, you know, that could handle bottlenecks over time. So that's one thing there where you look at the strategic area of the business. And the same thing is true in essence with material supply. Like when I was VP of operations, we had a backup supplier that we used for 20% of our volume all along, so that if something went awry with our number one supplier, because they were located in Brazil and there was plenty of things that could go wrong, which eventually it did. And when they did, because we were purchasing 20% from our backup source of supply all along, they came through. It did add some cost to our equation, you know, ongoing. However, it allowed us to, you know, be the best of both and be resilient at the right time without, you know, they didn't make us go through all sorts of hoops. And, you know, we worked with them to reduce the cost because we were working with them ongoing and had upfront conversations and, you know, helped them, you know, it was, you know, where we worked throughout our supply chain to make things improve. So there's a lot of opportunities, but, you know, this was for a key source of material supply too. So there's a lot of examples like that where you have to pick your battles, if you will.
Yeah, so you're strategic and selective about it. So in a way, I guess the dichotomy that I presented to you in a way is a false dichotomy in that it's not one or the other, right? It's a bit more complex than that. You've got to think it through.
True. But it's certainly something I'm seeing coming up with clients across the board. So it's a great, great topic, especially for emerging successfully from this COVID environment.
Yes, indeed. And so how would you say that, you know, maybe two or three ways that clients are better off after working with you than before, either through your own evaluation or from them having told you?
So a couple of the types of processes that I work with them is, one is what's oftentimes called sales inventory operations management, but it's about better predicting future demand, which is absolutely critical yet challenging in today's COVID environment. At the same time, how do we align that with capacity? And that could be, for example, certainly production capacity is pretty clear because, you know, there's people, there's machinery, groups of machines, and there's always some complication with how to do that successfully. But the same thing is true in distribution, is how do we, especially with what's happened with COVID, the rise of e-commerce, how do we align it with warehouse capacity? How do we know what that capacity is? And is it piece shipping or, you know, pallet shipping, which many times like it's been either e-commerce or if it's B2B, it could be drop ships. And then that could relate, you know, now to freight capacity. And, you know, there's a lot of challenges along the way. So one is how to better align demand and supply, which generally speaking, it really goes back to those three goals I was talking about earlier. So clients come to me because they were struggling with service levels, or they wanted to improve their like lead time performance. Many times that's the issue, but they also come for the same type of process when they're looking to reduce inventory levels or spread the inventory out to their supply chain more effectively, where it could really be a profit issue, and how do they improve their operational performance, which could be efficiency, as we were talking about earlier, but it also could be reducing waste, which I don't know if I would really call that efficiency. It's a very different, you know, type of thing, or it could be, you know, related to their suppliers. So that's one of the key programs that I tend to do with them.
To achieve those results, then, do you end up changing processes, changing infrastructure, changing layouts, changing commercial arrangements with service providers, all of those types of things?
Yeah, it's really all the above. So in my case, it's really not implementing the standard methodology across all clients. It's absolutely not that. Many of the times it's what you said, it's, you know, usually I have to start with the customer and the demand. So it's going to be, how do I better predict demands, but it could therefore lead to, how do I help them set up programs with their customers for how they can supply their customers with product without receiving orders? So, which is like VMI on the other, you know, for their customers. But it's also other creative customer programs, if you will. So there's that. But then there's, how do we improve the processes in our flow, which could lead to some of the lean concepts? It's basically the order fulfillment processes and cycles. And then there is their systems and technologies. So I'm finding that technology is accelerating rapidly, and that's one of the key changes with COVID as well. So there's a lot that can be done. Not only just implementing a modern ERP system, which I also help them select the appropriate systems and partners, but it's also peripheral technology. So it could be their business intelligence system that they need, could be an e-commerce system, could be IoT. You know, there's a lot of AI capabilities within a lot of these elements. So there's, how do we leverage technology? So it's really people, processes, technology, strategies. So where should we be producing? Should we make or buy in order to support? There's a lot of reasons. It could just be profit, but it also could be whether I'm making or buying or where I'm sourcing from. It's more of a strategic topic, if you will.
And what things have you and your clients learned from the experience of working with and working around COVID through this year that just finished, 2020?
Well, for sure, we have to be faster, faster than we even were before. So we have to be paying attention to changing customer demand patterns. Because many times our customers don't even know what's happening, and we have to help them pick up on what's going on with their customers and how we can collaborate across further layers in the supply chain so that we can get a better view of what's happening. So we have to be more proactive and quick, if you will, on both the supply side and the customer side. And then on the operations, you know, your internal operations, I'm finding that those companies that innovate and those companies that have been implementing along the technology roadmap. Now, this isn't just random technology, just for technology's sake, but are implementing the technology that's helping them achieve results within their industry, which may not be the same at all as from one company to the next or one industry to the next. So, but if they're further along in that process, they've been more successful, and they're going to be more successful because they need to have additional visibility throughout their supply chain. They need to, like you were talking about, the way to gain efficiency and resiliency is that they need to be able to leverage additional tools. So, like, for example, one of the systems that's gaining in popularity pretty significantly right now is it's tried and true in a way, but WMS systems. So handling their warehousing and, you know, a lot of the technology that goes along with that and, you know, some of the newer features of like being able to, you know, augmented reality and all sorts of things. But in essence, just keeping up with what makes sense in your case. Because in other cases, it doesn't make any sense, doesn't like save them any money. It doesn't help them from a customer point of view. And something else is a better thing for them to be utilizing. So
what are you seeing some companies thinking about now as they enter 2021? And hopefully, we do hope that it's going to be the course of this year, over the coming months, the end of the pandemic. And so what changes are companies looking at? And what do you see as the role of the supply chain in their being able to be successful in the future?
Well, I think that they're realizing that the supply chain is strategic and the supply chain is more important than ever before. And that really just can't be relegated to people without paying attention to it. So definitely it's the companies have realized that it's more strategic in nature and they need to pay more attention to it, for one. The other thing is that they're looking at how do I get ahead of the changing customer needs? How do I get ahead in terms of like the technology, like their technology roadmap? How do I create a flexible and agile, resilient type works? I don't know if I call it a work structure, or it's not just for their internal people though. It's to their, you know, customers and their suppliers as well. So how do I create this resiliency in my supply chain so that I can be responsive and successful? So they're looking at doing all that, because pretty much in 2020 they were focused more on survival. Not that they it depends, of course. Some of them were proactive companies were taking advantage. But for sure, now they're looking at how do I rush ahead of competition and take advantage of the opportunities, because there's always more opportunities that come out of challenging times than any other time. So it's a great time for them to stand out from the crowd and surpass their competition. So the smart companies are doing that. Now the companies that aren't as smart are really just hoping that it's going to get better.
So it sounds like the doing and making of strategy almost has to be a continuous process, you know, not something that we do now for 5 years or now for 2 years. And also that we need to be prepared to change it. So it's happening almost all the time and being tweaked all the time, so that we can almost turn on a dime as things change rapidly, as we saw with COVID. So I guess that seems to be what's happening. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. I saw that happening as well. Like some of the more successful companies were doing that already. We're starting to do that already, but it certainly aggravated it and accelerated that need. So there, you know, any longer than a year's strategy is pointless, pretty much. So they're pretty much just evolving their strategy so that they can keep themselves to be resilient. So I have a client actually that was sourcing products from China and did some value add processing in the U.S. And they were very successful. They were ahead. They generally speaking are thinking ahead. They had already moved their source of supply, or were in the process of moving their source of supply to Vietnam prior to the tariffs. So they looked like heroes when the tariffs came into place, because they avoided quite a bit of them. And then, of course, as COVID came into play too, they were more successful than the general client. With that said, they're not staying still. So even though in their case, it's not less expensive to bring their product back to the U.S. yet, where it is really for many products these days. They are looking at expanding their presence in Mexico, because they already have one in Mexico. It's just that it's quite far from their customer base in the U.S., which is kind of strange since it's Mexico. So one would think it's closer. But anyway, they already are looking at expanding their presence in Mexico, even though it takes a little longer, oddly enough, than it does to get from China. And it may not be less expensive, but they're thinking, how do I do that? And how do I expand maybe my presence even in the U.S. as their e-commerce is expanding as well? Mainly so that they can be better positioned to be resilient to changing circumstances. So folks are thinking about you know, how do I guess in this case is somewhat thinking about reshoring, but it's really, it's not a reshoring versus not a reshoring topic. It's much more of like, how do I set myself up to be successful? But that includes profitable and ability to change to changing circumstances quickly so they can change to customer needs.
Yeah. So the reshoring is not an end in itself, but it's probably the outcome of pursuing these other goals of resilience and profitability and agility and so on.
Yep. Sure.
It's a fascinating topic, and you know, there's a lot happening in this space this year. So I think you're probably going to be very busy. So when you're not busy in the business, what do you like to do in your discretionary time, spare time?
Pre-COVID, I really enjoyed traveling. So that's a bummer because I can't really do that anymore. I'm hoping that changes and I can get back to doing some travel.
International travel, you like doing?
Both, but I definitely do. I've been to Europe many times, been to Central America many times. I was in Vietnam about 6 months before this whole COVID, the whole COVID thing came to play. Australia, New Zealand, et cetera. So, but there's a lot of places in the U.S. too that I like to go.
Yeah. We might see you in Ireland sometime, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really do want to go to Ireland. So that's on my list. So definitely stay tuned. And aside from that, I like to play tennis as well. But unfortunately, my tennis club was similar to many of the small businesses. It was really quite successful. But they decided after the governor in California shut folks down, allowed them to open it up, and then shut them down again, that they had enough of that. So they decided that they were going to sell. And so I was really bummed about it. However, in the last week or so, I got a note that they actually did sell to another person, that's another group that's going to keep the tennis and swimming in place. So that's a good thing. So it wasn't starting out that way.
Are you reading anything currently that you would recommend to listeners, anything that's inspired you or is interesting?
Well, you know, I read so much for understanding what the latest trends are in you know, the industries that I work with, and of course with supply chain and operations, that I've been so immersed in all of that I haven't had the opportunity to read things for fun, if you will, although I enjoy it. So from that point of view, I would recommend it, but that would be what I'd really enjoy doing, is finding out what the trends are in in the various industries is really what I could add to that. Although I like mysteries, I just haven't read any recently. I've been watching them.
where can listeners find out more about you and about your business and some of your writing, your thinking, and so on?
Yes. Well, I do have thousands of articles, and I actually just upgraded my website, so they're all available for free. So you can go to lma-consultinggroup.com, and you can sign up for my I have some newsletters there, and like I said, thousands of articles on my blog for free. You're welcome to read all about them.
Excellent. So that's lma-consultinggroup.com, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Lisa. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks very much for being here.
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks also to all of our listeners. And remember that if you would like to know more about how I can help you to formulate and implement international business strategies that deliver, check out my blog on albalogistics.com or pick up my book, International Supply Chain Relationships, on Amazon, Google Books, or Apple Books. Thank you for listening, and keep well until the next time.